It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
I've made a mistake already.
Oh no, Kyle.
Yeah, dude. I forgot to put a t-shirt on under my hoodie today.
Oh no.
Because it's cooling down outside at night, and I like to sleep with the windows open. So when I wake up in the morning, it's a little chilly. So I just grab a hoodie and put it on. And then I'll grab a t-shirt as I'm leaving. And I'll put the t-shirt on just when I get to work. Just throw it on before I come in. And I forgot to do that this morning. So I'm just fully committed to the hoodie bit today.
Or shirtless.
No.
That's not happening.
Not today.
You could go raid the closet.
Like, that's a January move.
There is a couple of boxes.
Oh, that's true. I could go get a tee from... I have one in my car. But see, I'm charging my car today.
Oh, so it's way over there.
So I am way over yonder.
Yeah, but you go get yourself a nice classic 96.9 or 98.
I think the 96.9. I think the 96.9, the Eagle shirt would go great with my hat today.
Yeah, I think it probably
dark
would.
Red.
Yeah. I love the 98 Rock tees too. I might have to go grab myself one of those.
Ramsey said go get an ESPN 1320 shirt. I don't think we have any more.
I never got one.
Really?
Never got one.
Have you asked for one?
Yeah, I went over. I asked. They were already out.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
Joe has one.
I guess I'm not a very big deal. Well Joe has always, like, they just dress themselves and like
okay,
every day.
Okay, well, yeah, and Joe should be working here, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But no, that's a good idea. At the break, I'm going to go down to promotions.
Yeah.
And kick the door down and say, I need a tee. I don't care what kind of tee.
They have this whole back closet there.
I know.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was even there until I went to visit Complex one day.
Did you ever go to the one in NBC? Oh.
No. So that was, dude, I told you. And that's James. I'm Kyle. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is the Insiders. We've got a ton of Niner stuff to get to. We also have a full segment of Sacramento Kings today.
Yeah.
Yesterday we had like, hey, here's a little note for you. Okay. No, but today, you know what? There's enough small things going on that we said, screw it. We built a whole segment.
That's right.
We have the concepts of a plan for a Kings segment at 10:30. When I worked at NBC, I've told you this before. This is why we didn't meet.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you at NBC a ton of times, a lot of times. We might have even said, hey, because I'll say hi.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I am not like, I'm going to go introduce myself guy, especially when I'm a production assistant who runs like the ticker. That little thing that runs at the bottom of the
screen. Everyone's got a role, man.
I know that. But my goal, because I'd never worked in TV before, my goal was like, I'm going to put my head down, I'm going to do good work, and I'm going to try not to bother anybody.
Okay.
Even the other like PAs, production assistants, the associate producers, the editors, I tried not to bother anybody. And you eventually start to open up a little bit and you make your work friends and, you know, you start.
Yeah.
But if it came to talent or management and asking about like a merch room, yeah, no, that's a hard no for me. I was there less than a year. I was not that comfortable yet.
Okay, so one of the cool things about working there is that they would, every year I would get like two bags of stuff. Like I would get a new backpack every year or two, but I would get a bag, and in the bag would be like three polos, like one or two quarter zips. Mm-hmm. On top of that, like a ski jacket, a windbreaker.
Yeah.
A just kick around like somewhat poofy, but not super poofy.
Yeah.
Like down jacket.
Yeah.
So like my closet, I probably have seven jackets from NBC. But then on top of that, NBC has a room that's like the size of like a large walk-in closet. And in that room is every, if you're a fan of like the giveaways, like every bobblehead, every like t-shirt that they were associated with Giants, A's,
crazy,
Warriors, like the whole room is just filled with merchandise. And it's like, yeah, you want some? Go ahead. Like, we don't care.
So before I worked there, it's funny you say all that, because before I worked there, through the 49er, the NBCS 49ers account or whatever it is, I won some contest.
Okay.
This is like in 2012. In fact, I'm certain it was 2012 because of where I was located when I won this contest. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I won a thing from NBC. They sent me a box full of just that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
T-shirts, plastic cups, like all this. And I was like, man, this is so cool that I got this. This is such a neat thing. And then you work at a place like that and you realize that those T-shirts are just laying around. Those plastic cups are just, there's some producer with just a stack of them on their desk.
Like if there's a leak in the bathroom, they just throw a couple of T-shirts down and
seriously, seriously. And so now, so it was funny. Once I started working there, what was the show that they canceled? That they would, Night Chat.
Sports Night, Sports Net Live.
No, that wasn't it. It was like they would drink on the show.
Oh,
it was like a bar setting.
It wasn't the happy hour.
The happy hour.
I think it was the happy hour.
Yeah. Do you remember the homie Joe Sakti?
Of course.
Big Joe Sakti guy. When they canceled the happy hour, he's like, hey, do you want all this? And I got like sheets of stickers. I had coffee mugs. I was stocking my apartment with happy hour coffee mugs.
Yeah.
Quickly got rid of them. But yeah, so once I started working there, I realized that when I won this contest, it wasn't this like big thing like, hey, we have a winner. We need to make sure. Somebody, probably a production assistant, maybe an intern, just grabbed the box that the stuff got shipped in, went into that closet, and just started shuffling things into the box. Yeah. It was not a special thing at all.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's James of Kyle. We're the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Let's talk about real sports stuff now. Kyle Shanahan spoke with reporters yesterday, Tuesday, on a conference call, as he does after every single game, typically to provide injury updates, deeper insight into the game once he's had a chance to rewatch it. And because it's funny, watch a Kyle Shanahan press conference after the game, and they'll say, how did you think Dominic Pooney played? And he'll say something like, didn't really notice him, and typically the only time you notice an offensive lineman is when they mess up, so it's a good thing I didn't notice him. But then you ask him the next day, and he has a more in-depth answer. It is clockwork.
Yeah.
Ask about that player right after the game, ask him about the in the conference call, and you're going to get a different answer. And that was kind of the case with Christian McCaffrey's Achilles injury. Obviously, he didn't talk about it before the game, but in the conference call yesterday, he mentioned that it was Achilles tendonitis that has been bothering Christian McCaffrey since last year. And they thought he was going to be good to go. And it flared up, or whatever the exact language he used was. And it just was not good to play on Monday. Which leads me to believe this. That this is something the 49ers are going to manage all season long. We're just going to be talking about Christian McCaffrey's Achilles tendon all year. Every time he's slow to get up, every time he sits out of practice, this is just going to come up because this is now just a chronic thing. It's not just going to go away. He's not going to magically not have Achilles tendonitis tomorrow. So they're going to have to manage this in game all year, because if they're going to hold him out until like, yeah, hey, it's better, that's never going to happen.
It's never a good thing when a team starts talking about that he had this injury back in December, that he had this injury like during the NFC championship game or whenever it was, it's the first round of the playoffs, because now, you know, like it's something that they just can't figure out.
Mm-hmm.
And like, look, this is you've seen the workout videos, like Christian McCaffrey is like a workout warrior.
Yes.
Like his body is a temple.
He exercises.
Yes. He exercises all the time.
Frequently.
More than you and I, Kyle. We don't quite understand how much he exercises, you know, more than you and I. Anyway, he has he's a guy who can constantly is in motion. For him to have something that he can't shake, and that they haven't already been able to send, like, you know, whether it's massage therapists or whether it's somebody with a stem electro shock wave treatment, whatever it might be, that they haven't been able to get this thing to clear up, mm-hmm. it's a bit concerning. And especially when you look at McCaffrey's injury history before the 49ers, mm-hmm. like, look, this is what happens to NFL running backs. Mm-hmm. It is. It's what happens to they break down. And so you're hoping that this isn't something that will linger all season long. You hope that one day he wakes up and it's just not that big of an issue anymore. But I think it's a big concern because we're talking about an injury that if it happened, you know, in January or even December, that why is it not better by now? And if it's not better by now, how long will it take to get better? And, mm-hmm. and how will playing NFL games and rushing 15, 18 times and catching another 5 to 6 balls every mm-hmm. week, like, how will that help it? And the answer is it won't. So you're just wondering, like, how long-term this is going to be. And, like, look, you do. You have to be proactive if you're the 49ers. Mm-hmm. You have to do things like hand the ball to somebody else sometimes.
Yes.
Throw the ball to somebody else.
That seems like the very obvious solution. And yeah. Kenny asked this yesterday on D'Lo and Casey, which is coming up noon to 4. Kenny asked this yesterday, and I have flip-flopped on my answer. Because sometimes when Jesse leaves, I'll just sit at the board because I'm a paranoid radio person who doesn't like a show running without somebody behind the board. And so I'll sit there, and they got into a Niners thing, and I injected myself into the conversation, as I am wont to do. And Kenny asked, would you put McCaffrey just on IR right now? And then you open up a roster spot, he's out for a minimum of 4 weeks, mm-hmm. and you bring him back in October, and you ramp him up, and that way he's good for the stretch run in the playoffs. And my initial answer was no. And I think if you're just talking pure just roster management and strategy, it kind of makes sense because you're designating him for a return. And if you don't need to put him on IR, you only get 8 return designations. You can only bring 8 guys back off IR. And the 49ers ran into this a couple years ago where they couldn't bring anyone back off IR by the end of the year.
Yeah, they ran out of players.
They were like strategically having to move guys to... There was a player they could have put on IR, but they didn't because they weren't going to be able to bring him back. It was a mess. So I get why they would want to avoid that, and that's probably the strongest argument against it. But it wouldn't surprise me if Christian McCaffrey is out Sunday and maybe out the following week.
Yeah.
As they just kind of figure out, okay, how can we manage this to the point that A, limiting his touches in games, which we'll get to, but B, not rushing him back onto the field just for the sake of having him on the field. If they go out and kick the holy crap out of the Titans on Sunday, which I don't think they're going to. I think the Vikings. I think the Vikings are going to be a decent team. I don't think the 49ers are going to railroad them. But if they do that, I just don't think there's, and McCaffrey doesn't play, I don't think there's a need to push him back into action in September.
No.
This is all about January and February.
Yeah, I totally agree, Kyle. Yeah. This is, you need to buy yourself some time here and make sure that he's right.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, like, if he'll ever be 100% this season, mm-hmm. that's a problem, mm-hmm. right? Especially if you're looking at like 7, 8, 9, 10 months of like rehabbing the same injury and you're not mm-hmm. getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. And there isn't like some magical thing that you can do here with this type of injury. Mm-hmm. It's typically an overuse injury. And, you know, again, like I've dealt with it with NBA players for forever. I'm just surprised that they haven't been able to get it to cool down by now. And then it's still an issue. And that, you know, maybe it is that the calf is something that happened again. You know, that like the calf strain or whatever it was early in training camp, maybe that was just like hiding a symptom. But I'm intrigued to see how this plays out. And like, look, when a guy goes out like Jordan Mason did and proves that he can, you know, be a starting level running back, at least for, you know, fill in duty. Like, why not change your sort of direction here? Why not elevate a young guy and let him sort of become something that gives you another element to your offense?
Yeah, man. That's what I don't want to say I don't understand, mm-hmm. but it's something I haven't understood the last couple of years, is why not give Jordan Mason a handful of carries? Why not give Elijah Mitchell a handful of carries in a game?
Mm-hmm.
I went back and looked. The only time a player has gotten, since Christian McCaffrey arrived, follow me, I've tried to figure out a way to word this where it's not clunky, but I can't. Since Christian McCaffrey arrived, the only time another running back has gotten 10 or more carries in a game that wasn't a blowout was in McCaffrey's third game with the team against the Chargers in week, whatever that was, 9 of 2022. Elijah Mitchell had 18 carries in a 22-16 win.
Mm.
The only other time a player's gotten 10-plus carries, Christian McCaffrey either got hurt in the game or the Niners won by 20 points or more.
Yeah.
Like, that's been kind of it. So I think that's an adjustment the 49ers have to make here is whenever Christian McCaffrey does come back, maybe it's this week. Shanahan said if it was a playoff game, he would have played. And that makes sense. If they're managing this for the postseason, then yeah, it makes sense that, yeah, if it was a playoff game, then he would have been on the field. But whenever he does come back, whether it's this week, next week, the week after, or otherwise, they have to utilize Jordan Mason.
Yeah.
He's just good. Get good players on the field. Whether you want to do two running backs or use McCaffrey as a decoy, whether you want to just line Jordan Mason up and, hey, he's your short yardage and goal line guy, or you want to give Christian McCaffrey a handful of plays off because, you know what, he's had three carries in a row. Let's see, he's up to 10 carries and we're halfway through the second quarter. Yeah, we're gonna give him a blow here and we're gonna let Jordan Mason get on the field. They have to do something if they're going to properly manage this. Because if they're waiting until the perfect time to go, okay, Christian McCaffrey, you're gonna get all the touches again, it's just not, it's never gonna show up. That's never gonna get here.
Well, that, and this is modern NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's why everyone complains about about running backs in fantasy football now. Like, there's just no way to rely on a back for as many carries, especially over a 17-week season. And we've seen the carries go down for NFL running backs. We've seen, or they don't. And, you know, there are players that go out and teams burn through them in 3 or 4 years, and they just use them as, like, disposable cameras. Like, hey, what's up next? You know, yep. And that happens.
Except disposable cameras have gotten more expensive.
They have gotten more expensive.
Am I right? Conclusion to that, by the way, did not order.
You didn't.
Did not do it.
You might just use your phones. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's what we'll do. We just wanted the aesthetic.
Oh, yeah.
Of the old design. It just looks really cool. But there's apps you can find that'll make your photos look like that. So that's probably that's how it'll go.
All right.
I know Disneyland used to sell them. Maybe we'll buy disposable cameras at Disneyland.
Oh.
That'll probably be cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's the thing. I saw somebody in the chat, and this dovetails into a conversation I want to have about Kyle Shanahan specifically. Salute to TC, who's in the chat today. But somebody said, do you think this, I think it was Greg Tabers, said, does this draw more attention to Shanahan overusing backs? I would love the evidence that Kyle Shanahan overuses running backs.
Mm-hmm.
Please provide that evidence to me as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah, because he's, again, like his father, they've always done backs by committee. And it used to be you, a Shanahan offense, you had no idea who was going to bust out 1 week to the next.
Christian McCaffrey had 339 touches last year. That led the league. That wasn't even the most touches he's had in a season. He had 403 touches in his second year for the Panthers.
Yeah.
Like, 339 touches is not that many in the scope of an NFL season historically. This is the first time we've ever seen Shanahan really rely on one guy. And then the other night with Jordan Mason, obviously running it 28 times, that was the most carries a player has ever had under Kyle Shanahan. And I think Elijah Mitchell had 27 a couple of times, and Christian McCaffrey might have had 26 or 27 a couple of times. But it's not Kyle Shanahan overusing running backs. Like, now we're just making up criticism.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
No, I'm with you.
If you want to say, and I would agree with you, that Jordan Mason or anyone else should have had maybe some more touches last year, I'm totally with you. And that's what we're arguing right now is, hey, when Christian McCaffrey comes back, they need to integrate Jordan Mason more. Jordan Mason, if he gets 8 carries a game, that is, and that's just carries.
Mm-hmm.
8 carries a game, 2 per quarter. And you could probably make up most of those in the fourth quarter if you're trying to salt away the clock. 2 carries per quarter, 8 per game. That is 136 fewer carries for Christian McCaffrey over the course of an entire season.
Wow.
Like that matters come January, come February.
No, I totally agree. And I think that there's a way that even if you give them the third drive of the game,
mm-hmm.
you know, as long as you're not cooking and everything's, you know, whatever's happening.
Yeah.
Give them like the third drive of the game. Give them the third drive of the second half. Just you'll be able to get those carries right there.
Mm-hmm.
Like barring a bunch of three and out, but I don't see it being a three and out situation.
Typically not.
Yeah.
It just, it feels really, really easy and like something that would really help the team, especially when you're trying to manage an injury to your offensive MVP.
Yeah.
Kyle Shanahan. I was thinking about this today. And hang on, real quick. I was waiting for a screen to load. I looked all time at players who had 339 touches or more in a season. Mm-hmm. That's how many Christian McCaffrey had last year, and we're talking about overuse. Walter Payton, 9 times, had that many touches or more in a season. LaDainian Tomlinson, 8. Curtis Martin, 8. Emmitt Smith, 8. Edgerrin James, 7. Eddie George, 7. There are so many. Christian McCaffrey's had that twice in his career. Same amount as Saquon Barkley, same amount as Le'Veon Bell, same amount as Derrick Henry. Like, this is just, it's not great. Ezekiel Elliott's done it 3 times. LeSean McCoy did it 3 times. If you're looking for more contemporary names, the fact that that was a criticism levied against Kyle Shanahan in the chat kind of speaks to the point that I wanted to make. What's the people's deal with Kyle Shanahan? I know we talked about the reason I was thinking about this is because we talked about this yesterday with some of his game management.
Yeah.
And how he plays conservatively. He would rather kick a field goal and ensure the other team doesn't get the ball back before the half than score a touchdown or try to score a touchdown and risk the other team getting the ball before the end of the half.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a too conservative way to play in the modern NFL. But the criticism is, well, he hasn't won a Super Bowl. Okay. That's fair. That is a fair criticism.
Mm-hmm.
They've been to 2. You can nitpick the play calling. You can nitpick this and that. But let's go to the 4th-and-1 play in overtime against Niners Chiefs in this year's Super Bowl. 4th-and-1. Patrick Mahomes, read option, keeps it, goes around the right edge, first down. Let's say Nick Bosa stays home there instead of diving at the running back. Say Nick Bosa stays home. Tackles Patrick Mahomes. Ball game over. That one play goes differently.
Mm-hmm.
It suddenly validates everything about Kyle Shanahan now.
All of it.
Everything is good now?
Yes.
And because that one play went sideways, or pick a different play. Because the right side of the offensive line had some injuries and the guys got mixed up with their communication and they had a free rusher. If that doesn't happen and the Niners score a touchdown and get a stop, that Kyle Shanahan is suddenly awesome now? Because that one thing, like, it is so hard to win a Super Bowl, and to whittle a coach's worth down to that, like, this is if he has this, he's good. If they don't, like, Aaron Rodgers, can you imagine the discourse around Aaron Rodgers if Aaron Rodgers did not have a Super Bowl victory?
Oh, yeah.
But he got one 15 years ago.
Yeah, it would be a little different.
Right, and now everything is awesome. Aaron Rodgers is amazing. Wow, what a guy. If he didn't have that one suit, it's so silly, dude. It is so. I am not here to say Kyle Shanahan is a perfect coach. He's not. I have several criticisms of him. We talked about it yesterday. But in the grand scheme of things, there aren't that many better coaches in the league right now.
No,
I certainly don't think there are that many available.
Like, look. I think that there's always a moment where you think, okay, can this coach win me the big game, right? Can he get us over the hump? And the 49ers have got there a couple of times now. You know, they've been the NFC mm-hmm. champions a couple of times. They've made it to the Super Bowl. He hasn't been able to get over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
There is always going to be a moment where you have to make a decision, like, is this a guy that can get us over the hump? But I also think that you have to look around the league and realize that, number one, continuity means everything in the league.
Big time.
Number two, no one can get past Patrick Mahomes and his head coach, mm-hmm. and Andy Reid. So, yeah. Like, Andy Reid, it took, what, 20 years for him to win his first
21,
Super
I think.
Bowl?
Yeah.
And it's because he was up against other great coaches as well. Mm-hmm. So like, look, I'm not here to like say that I think that Shanahan right now is a Hall of Fame NFL coach.
He's not.
But he has an opportunity to win a couple of championships.
Yes.
And that will put him in the conversation. And he has an opportunity because he's getting his team all the way there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whether or not they have the one game where they get over the hump.
I just don't know how you can have the audacity as a 49er fan.
Yeah.
After watching Chip Kelly and watching Jim Tomsula and watching the final year of Jim Harbaugh. And then everything that happened before Jim Harbaugh, whether it's Dennis Erickson or Mike Nolan or Mike Singletary, it was a mess, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It was a disaster. And the 49ers finally have a coach that's worth a damn, and you get people like TC who have the audacity to whine about it? Give it a second. Because TC, bro, TC has been rocking with this station forever. And I remember when I was appearing as a guest on D'Lo and KC, TC was out on Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
Oh, he's arrogant. Okay, first of all, you don't know the guy. Does he come across a little abrasive in the media sometimes? Like, yeah, but what coach doesn't? Bill Belichick's like famous for that.
Oh, yeah.
That's the critique? Oh, I don't like that he doesn't go for it on fourth down. Okay, that's fair, but you want him fired for that? He hires good coaches,
yep.
Which is a skill that matters in the NFL. He hires good coaches. He is responsible overall for the roster construction, a roster that has been really freaking good for more than half a decade now. That's really hard to do in the NFL. Questionable play calls in some spots? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I don't think there's a perfect coach. And, you know, again, in order to win a Super Bowl, a lot of times you have to throw a perfect game.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he hasn't thrown his perfect game yet. And that's okay. Like, you want to win championships. You want to mm-hmm. win Super Bowls. I would love to have been there to see a 49ers parade downtown.
Sure.
San Francisco and everything else. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I think you have to understand, like, how good he has been. You know, it's the same argument I would have made for Mike Brown mm-hmm. this last year. Like, hey, you just went 16 years without making it to the playoffs, and you had a coach win 48 and then 46 mm-hmm. games. He's a really good coach. His career path is, like, his career win percentage, everything says he's a really good coach.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you just need to like calm down and everyone just like back off, back away from the everything and just let him figure out how to take the team to the next level.
Yeah,
because he's done it before.
The reason the intensity is so high is because this coach is now having success and the expectation is now high. And the reason the expectation is higher is because that coach is good. That's it. So we can keep talking about this. You mentioned some Mike Brown stuff there that I would love to get into. In fact, we're going to get into the Kings in the next segment. Got a ton of little bit of Kings, a ton of small bits of Kings news, a ton of little bit. We got a ton of small bits of Kings news that we'll get to for you before we get back into the NFL. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube, and we're hanging out with you till noon on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Hitter.
Back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
That's James. I'm Kyle. We're going to put a pin in the NFL for a little bit. The NFL is going to dominate this show for a while until we get NBA training camps back up and rolling.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're here in Sacramento. Love the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah.
And we got some nuggets to get through on the Kings front.
There's a bunch of little stuff that's going on. So we talked about it yesterday. You know, they announced all their coaching changes.
Yeah.
Jay Triano, of course, was elevated to associate head coach. Ricardo Foyce and Jim Morin were added to the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a bunch of little things that are happening. So that's one thing that we'll see. And, like, the month of September is usually where you're just kind of tidying up and doing a lot of, like, mm-hmm. little stuff. And the Kings are, according to our friend Sean Cunningham, they're set to bring in Jay Crowder for a workout. Yeah.
Can I just, hey, I know that somebody listening is like, applause for Jay Crowder. Like, Jay, really? It's Jay Crowder. He's over 6'3".
He doesn't play guard.
He doesn't play guard. Come on.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, look, I don't know that the Kings are going to sign Jay Crowder. We're talking about a 34-year-old guy who, you know, basically plays a forward position, 6'6", 235. You like to call guys like this a hoss. He's a hoss.
He's a hoss.
He's a guy who doesn't mind mixing it up, who is a veteran leader and had a falling out with the Suns, like, what was it, last year or the year before?
Mm-hmm.
Ended up playing the last two seasons with the Bucks. I don't know that he's got like so much left in him that, you know, you want to sign a guy and play him 20 something minutes tonight. But, you know, we're talking about a veteran who can come in and play the 3-and-D type style. He doesn't get bullied even when he goes to the power forward spot.
Mm-hmm.
His stats have kind of shown like the diminishing returns over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a little bit of trouble staying healthy. You know, he at times has been a really good 3-point shooter. But his career average is at 34.8, and he's down at he had 34.9 last season. Just your standard 3-and-D like wing that they, mm-hmm. the Kings have had trouble sort of finding. And it looks like, again, they're going to bring him in and give him one of those workouts like they did with Isaiah Thomas, Lonnie Walker, Tony Bradley, and Juan Toscano-Anderson earlier in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And again, those are just like, you're coming in, you're going up against the guys who are out there playing hard and having a good time. And, you know, if you show something, maybe the Kings will sit down and have a conversation. The Kings do have, they can carry up to 21 guys on the roster
mm-hmm.
during this time of year. As of right now, I think maybe it's 16, 17, 18 for as far as regular roster. And then your three ways, mm-hmm. two ways. So I think they have one or two spots open, and this is a player that you might kick the tires on.
Mm-hmm.
But I would caution everybody, the Kings are really, really up against the NBA luxury tax already,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be difficult for them to avoid going over the tax this season. And I, you know, again, it means a lot if you go over the tax. You not mm-hmm. only do you have to pay dollar for dollar for your first $5 million, over the cap, but on top of that, you lose the sharing of the luxury tax money,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, 11 or 12 million bucks last year. So I don't know that they're willing, unless he comes in and they're like, okay, we see how this works and how he would fit in. And we actually think he could be back into the rotation guy for us right now. Mm-hmm. And he would be willing to accept a role like that. It's hard to see them going and like, you know, putting a stamp on this and saying, yeah, let's bring him in. It's possible, but you know, you have cheaper options,
mm-hmm.
sort of deal.
This is, we did a whole thing about guys in theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in theory, this would be great. In theory, Jay Crowder would be great. The idealized version of Jay Crowder is playing minutes for the Kings, for real. Mm-hmm. But at this point, Jay Crowder isn't better. I'm, if you tell me I need to give 12 minutes a night to Jay Crowder or Jalen McDaniels, just give him to McDaniels.
It's a coin flip for me. Like, I think that there's a way in which Jay Crowder outplays Jalen McDaniels and becomes a guy, right? Because again, when you're looking at players like this, you need to not look at scoring at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, do they bring toughness? Do they bring?
Yeah, it's a good point.
Do they bring defense? Do mm-hmm. they? Do they help your defensive rotation? So mm-hmm. even if they're not blocking shots, they're getting steals, or, you know, they may at 34 years old might lack a little bit of lateral quickness. Mm-hmm. Like, how are they as a team defender? How much can they help improve your team overall? And I think Jay Crowder is a guy who's proven throughout his career that he's a really, really good team defender. He's a tough guy. He's a guy that you can't push around. And like, look, if you're looking at this roster right now and you're saying, The Kings have to go up against Kevin Durant in division. They've got to go up against LeBron James in division.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who exactly on this roster is going to guard those guys? And you can say Keegan Murray. Okay. Keegan Murray picks up 3 fouls in the first half. Who is going to guard these guys?
And good point.
That's where you start to have problems. Like, that's where the fact that Harrison Barnes is no longer on this roster actually matters. And so I don't know if Jay Crowder is the right guy, but I at least like the idea of you know, saying, hey, look, if he would be willing to come in and play on a veteran minimum, you know, go ahead.
Take me through real quick, because this take me back through. If they, let's say they watch Jay Crowder here, and I will say of all the players we've talked about that they brought in for these workouts this summer, Jay Crowder's the one that makes the most sense.
The most sense.
Without
sure.
question.
Yeah.
Take me through the machinations of signing him. Is it a matter of they would just sign him and he'd be the last guy on their roster?
Well, I mean, yeah, maybe, but the way that this works, though, is like, if you get him for a veteran minimum, right? And that's probably what he's playing for now at this point in his career. Mm-hmm. And especially since it's, you know, mid-September and he's still not signed with the team. We're talking about a guy who's made a lot of money, but last year in Milwaukee he made, you know, $2 million, right? So he took a minimum deal last year. So when you're looking at players, once you get, if you're going to sign a veteran, right? And you bring him in and you bring him for the veteran minimum, he's going to make like $3.4 million, $3.2 million, something like that. So whatever Alex Len is making is right around $3.2, $3.3 million.
Right, because he's played however many years.
Yes, he gets a certain dollar amount for years of service, mm-hmm. right? But all veteran minimum contracts like this are based off a second year salary. So his salary, you have to pay him the $3.3 or $3.4 million, he would only count like $2.1 million, $2.2 towards the cap, whatever a standard minimum contract is for a second-year player. So, again, I think the easiest way to look this up would be Colby Jones makes what? And that's what we're talking about. So Colby Jones signed a league minimum deal. This year he'll make $2.12 million. That's how much, around that, because mm-hmm. years of service. So, because of the new NBA salary cap for this year, it might be $2.2 million. So that's what's going to count against the cap.
And it's as easy as signing him, though?
Yeah, if he wants to play here and the Kings want to sign him, yeah, you can sign him. And then, I mean, he's not going to accept a partial guaranteed contract, which is like what Orlando Robinson got, a $500,000 partial guarantee on his deal, which was a really high number for a guy. Who's not just a proven NBA player.
For just a guy.
yeah. So you would likely give Jay Crowder a full guaranteed contract for the year and then see how it goes. You know, and you can always waive him and pay out the money. That happens if things go south. But for me, like, this is a type of player that would make sense because you are lean at the forward position. He can play the three and the four. He can shoot the ball. He knows his role. And you would just hope that he would be 100% bought in, that this is what we're trying to do here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. If I would be pro Jay Crowder, like, it's fine. I wouldn't move the Kings up where I think they're going to finish in the standings because of it.
No.
But you'd feel better about the bench.
No.
You'd feel better about, we talk about this a lot at the end of last year. There were so many games at the end of last season where you're looking at the Kings lineups and you're going, man, they just don't have enough dudes. Whereas if you're putting Jay Crowder in as your ninth guy or your 10th guy, or you need somebody to throw it, like you said, LeBron James or Kevin Durant or whoever, and just give you 12 adequate minutes.
Yeah, some resistance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think you'd feel good about that.
Yeah, and I would say too, like, if you're signing him as your 15th man on your roster, right? So Boogie Ellis is a guy who the Kings have signed. We went through the list yesterday. Who is the kid that they signed a couple of days ago? They brought in another young player who's more of a G League. Oh, here we go. Terry Taylor. More of a G League guy, right? And they're bringing him in. So then that way, if you trade for his rights, you can give him a little bit of guaranteed money as a two-way player. I mean, a little bit of money for a training camp invite. And then when you waive him, you have a contract that says, hey, you have to stick in the G League for 60 days before you get your guaranteed money from the NBA. So that's why we see a lot of these deals in camp. The Kings did a couple of years ago with Sam Merrill. They did it last year with Scal Labissiere, where they signed Scal and waived him same day. They'll do the same thing with Scal this year. He's coming back. They're going to sign him. They're going to waive him, and he'll go back to the G League, and he'll retain his G League rights. But you're giving a guy a couple $100,000 or $100,000 to make sure that he sticks around, and just to give him a little bit more money to add to his G League salary. Mm-hmm. They have a spot where, I guess my point is this, if you were to sign Jay Crowder and say he's our 15th guy that we signed, mm-hmm. he's not your 15th guy. He instantly moves above, like on...
Oh, right, yeah, 15th roster spot, but not number 15 in the rotation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think some people will go, oh, well, why are you spending money on a guy who's just at the back end of the bench? It's like, because Jay Crowder might not be at the back end of the bench. Jay Crowder might be a rotational player.
He might for your literally team. Be your, like, backup four?
Yeah, there might be a point where... And even having a guy like that, mm-hmm. it could... If you need to start Trey Lyles at the four and move Keegan Murray mm-hmm. to the three and DeMar DeRozan to the two, it might actually balance out okay, sure. right? So, and I'm not saying start Jay Crowder for 82 games, but there's a possibility that Jay Crowder has enough left in the tank that he could help a team.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I agree.
I think the versatility of him is intriguing, at least. And to me, this isn't a knock on Isaiah Thomas or you know, the other guys, the Tony Bradleys of the world, the Juan Toscano Andersons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just a better fit for this current roster.
Yeah, man. That's it. It's not that... It's all fit related.
Yeah, it's total fit related.
We all know the Kings have guards.
They got lots of them.
Yeah, so many guards.
They do have lots of them.
Jay Crowder, listed at 6'6". I feel like he plays a lot bigger than that.
Yeah, I mean, 6'6", 235, though. Yeah, I mean, that's a big man. That's a big man, so.
All right, Jay Crowder in for a workout per Sean Cunningham of Fox 40, friend of the program. The Stockton Kings made an addition as well. Can you explain to me the returning player rights for Dexter Dennis and Justin Powell?
Yeah, so.
Guards.
So, exactly. The Kings today, in a three-way swap, were able to pick up Dexter Dennis and Justin Powell for the returning player rights of Jalen Noel.
Sure.
Now, the way that G League contracts work is they're basically one-year contracts. Like, two-way contracts, you can sign for multiple years. You can sign a player to a two-year, two-way contract, right?
Okay.
But G League contracts basically go year to year, and players have their rights with whatever team drafted them or traded for them. So these guys can't go play somewhere else.
Mm.
So the Kings just acquired two guys that they may or may not have like a bunch of use for. But, you know, you're talking about some decent little scoring guards in Dexter Dennis and Justin Powell. Dexter Dennis is the one that I think you kind of circle here and go, okay, he's at least intriguing. He put a bunch of points last year playing in Texas. And so when they trade for him, what this does is if Dexter Dennis and Justin Powell want to play in the G League, they now will play for you.
Okay.
If they don't want to play in the G League and they want to go play overseas, they don't have official contracts right now. And G League contracts are like super, super low. I don't know what the maximum a G League mm-hmm. player makes now, but I mean, I think it climbed up to like $90,000, but it's not like some, you know, huge sure. moneymaker as sure. opposed to a two-way contract, which is half of a rookie scale contract in the NBA.
Right.
So a two-way player makes roughly $550,000
mm-hmm.
For the year. These other players, they make way less. And so you're hoping that, you know, maybe a guy comes in, he looks really good in your camp, and you give him an exhibit 10, you bring him into your camp, you give him a little bit more money, mm-hmm. like what they've done with Scal and some of the other players, and then you just kind of put him in the G League and you've got his rights. Same thing like Scal. The Kings have Scal's two-way. They have his G League rights as of right now. So this was just one of those moves that they went out and said, hey, look, I think we can get more talent at a position. And Jalen Noel, I believe, is on an NBA roster right now. And if he makes an NBA roster, that G League team is not going to get to, you know, sort of reap the benefits from this.
What's the impetus behind bringing them in? Is it just to get them into Stockton and see what they look like?
Yeah.
Filling out a G League roster?
Well, that's part of it. You're filling out a G League roster, mm-hmm. and like, you want to build a program here, right? And a program, sometimes that means that you go out and you get some of these players that
mm-hmm.
you just want to kick the tires on them and see what they're like in your camp. Especially like a guy like Dexter Dennis. We were talking about, he played for three different colleges. right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those players where he's bounced around a ton. I'd like to know how many high schools he played for. I don't know, but those guys usually, you know, there's usually a reason why that happens, and you want to get them in your camp and see what that could possibly be. Maybe he just played at Wichita and in Texas A&M. It's actually Justin Powell who played at three different colleges. But guys who bounce around, you want to get them in your system and be like, okay, who is this guy and what can he do? Either way, like, these are low risk moves by the Kings. And you're just trying to build a program, and you're trying to build a winner at the G League level as well as the main level. Mm-hmm. In case you have a guy like Colby Jones and you want to send him down and give him, you know, a really good opportunity to sort of run a team for a certain amount of time and say, okay, like, look, who are you going to be at the G League level? What you don't want to do is take a guy and put him at the G League level with no talent around him.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not going to help him.
Right.
Like the focus is going to be on him, and he's going to have a really tough time developing. So having good, talented players, having a guy like Scal who's going to be like 28 or 29 down in the G League who, you know, can get you 20 and 10.
Yeah.
That's a good thing to have on, you know,
definitely,
to help a guy like Colby Jones develop. And that's what this is about. It's about developing these other guys. And, you know, they've got 3 two-way players again this year, and you want to see how those guys develop.
Speaking of Stockton, the Kings have a new G League head coach, Quentin Crawford, back with the Stockton Kings. He was part of the coaching staff in Sacramento a few years back, been an assistant in the league. Has moved the needle for you?
I really like Q. He's a good dude.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who I can't remember which regime he was with because they're all over the board, and he wasn't an assistant in Sacramento. He was like a video coordinator and a player development guy. But I always thought he was a good dude, and he's gone on to earn his way into the league, getting assistant coaching jobs around the league. He's been on Frank Vogel's staff a couple of times. And this is a guy who, like, if you're going to go out there and find sort of the next guy to take your program and hopefully elevate the program, but also give him like head coaching experience so he can sort of move up the bench on your pro club. I like the move. Again, good people, and that's something that you're always looking for. Like, he made an impression when he was here, and so super happy for Quentin to get another look here in Sacramento.
All right, last Kings note here for you as we finish up the first hour on the Insiders. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube sponsors the program here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader. De'Aaron Fox is hanging out with Steph Curry in China promoting his new shoes. Maybe the savviest thing De'Aaron Fox has done in his career is attaching himself to Steph Curry right at the point that you're starting to envision an NBA that doesn't have Steph Curry in it, where Steph Curry is 36. He has 3 years left. He has 2 years left and then just signed an extension. So 3 years left under contract with the Warriors. This feels like De'Aaron Fox kind of positioning himself to be to take over the Curry brand and to be the face of the Curry brand post Steph.
Yeah, so when De'Aaron Fox decided to opt out of his Nike deal a couple of years ago, because everybody comes into the league, they're all Nike guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the most part,
Cooper Flagg.
Yeah, if you don't have a brand, you're a Nike guy,
sure.
Right? And so Fox, early in his career, he was a Nike guy. Then he went through this period where, number one, he's a free agent. But there's something that Fox did here that was always intriguing to me. He gave all of these shoes a test drive. Mm-hmm. And he, as a free agent, was able to wear whatever he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to register what you're going to wear from one night to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And he test drove all the shoes in games, in the NBA, during the regular season.
Crazy.
And then finally said, you know what? The shoe that fits me the best, the shoe that works with my ankle braces is the Curry's.
Mm-hmm.
And so that he went with Team Curry. I think this is also part of him leaving, going to Rich Paul and being a Rich Paul client. It's, you now have the opportunity to go sign deals like this where you're not just going to be a Steph Curry athlete. You get your own signature shoe. Mm-hmm. Like, De'Aaron Fox is getting a signature shoe. And that's why it's always weird how the perception of De'Aaron Fox outside of Sacramento is like so quiet. Like,
yeah,
people don't,
yeah,
you know, we're talking about a guy who finished like eighth in the league in scoring, and mm-hmm. people don't talk about him as if, well, even he didn't make the All-Star team.
If you went to, I don't know, let's pick a, if you went to Memphis and you polled Grizzlies fans as they walked in the stadium and said, hey, who were the top 10 scorers in the league last year?
Mm-hmm.
Save for the super duper NBA nerds who know it off the top of their head, nobody's going to say De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
And that's because nobody considers it.
Well, I think like he averaged more points per game than, I don't know, Anthony Edwards and mm-hmm. Steph Curry mm-hmm. and Tyrese Maxey.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're Jaylen Brown. Mm-hmm. Like there's all these players he averaged more points per game than,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't really get the notoriety. And I think this is, it's a little bit like the Netflix series for Domas. This mm-hmm. is giving him a sort of new opportunity to become more of a global brand. I mean, you see him in China with Steph and fans are flocking to these guys. He is going to, I mean, just in this appearance alone will probably help his NBA.
Yes.
Balloting.
Big time.
Like he's being recognized right now in China as a Curry brand athlete with his own shoe. And so I'm super excited for him because again, he's put in the work and gotten better every year. Mm-hmm. And while the notoriety hasn't always been there outside of Sacramento, mm-hmm. this is kind of like, it's, you know, like the Jerry Maguire, Rod Tidwell thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you gotta do the celebration. You gotta dance.
Yeah.
And this is Fox's way of like becoming more of a global brand.
Yeah. So the Curry brand is basically, the Curry brand is to Under Armour what the Jordan brand is to Nike.
Of course.
So there's no other. It's Steph and De'Aaron.
Yeah, for NBA.
That's it on this Curry brand. So this is a really cool opportunity for him, and I agree with you, man. Attaching yourself to a player like Steph Curry immediately after the Olympics, where Steph was the hero in the semifinal and the final, is really smart by De'Aaron Fox, and I think we're gonna see his international profile climb significantly here over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I also, just to add a real quick, remember that Team USA really, really worked with Nike.
Mm-hmm.
And you could add that to the list of reasons why De'Aaron Fox may not have been in the Olympics this last year.
Yeah. All right. That's your Kings update for today. Got a whole segment out of the Kings on September 11th. That's a pretty big deal. All right. 11 o'clock. Second hour. That's what I was looking for. Here we go. Second hour coming up next on The Insiders. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Voice guy, repeat that for me.